What is up, guys? Welcome back to New Dogs Old Tricks. We got our second episode here. It has been insane. It has just been absolutely crazy. First episode went out at this point about 2 weeks ago. We sent it early, and just the feedback, everything was insane. It was just crazy how fast everything came. Appreciate you guys taking it 2 weeks early. It was something that happened. We were out here, and I'm glad we did make sure everything went off without a hitch with me being out of state. So the only downside was it made us even more excited to keep recording. So I knew we wanted to get back on here.
Yep. Definitely want to get back on and give you guys some good education.
Well, it's extremely exciting for today. We got our first guest on here. We've been talking about him from the start, basically, and we're going to kick off with thanking him again as one of our sponsors. Got Jeremy Sanders, Crew First Culture. Insane. I sent Brendan a screenshot this morning. We got Jeremy down on the sidebar. We'll introduce him a little bit, but you can hear everything going on. And I sent him a screenshot of a text I got this morning just saying that he was excited to come on, couldn't wait to have our conversation, just that today was the day. And I'm like, I said, just this guy, man. Like, I can't believe that. I can't believe the people that we've already been in contact with throughout the couple of trainings that we've been to from the first episode, hearing from all of you guys at those trainings. And just, I mean, for me personally, hearing all like my family members, my close friends, who I got so many messages from people not in the fire service. They're like, "Hey, I watched your podcast. Like, I thought it was really cool. Everything here." I was like, "You weren't the target audience, but that's insane." Right. Like,
we got a lot of outside audience, which is great. I'm glad.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we talked about. We got lots of plans for this podcast and things, and that's kind of what we're really hopeful for, is that a lot of the stuff can be applied to every job out there. I know it's about new guys. We get a little bit talking about the battle stories and the firefighting and everything there, but can be really applied to everybody. So it's just crazy we've contacted with, been able to reach out. Can't thank him enough. We're going to thank him 16 more times, like I said, especially when he's on, but Crew First Culture. Next up, he's been pounding away. We're really close to finishing up a logo, Jobtown Graphics. So really excited for that. We got the sketch there, making some little tweaks there. And then hoping by next episode, we'll have it finalized and have it all updated and show you guys what he came up with. So it's been awesome. Been a fantastic work with them, like Brennan said in last episode, for just everything in terms of our department and this. Like, he does fantastic work. If you got some passion, you want to, you know, make a logo, get something with your crew, reach out to him on Facebook. He does some fantastic work. And then last but not least, we got Taylor's Tin. So signs up there, just talking to them, reached out to them when we put the first episode. They said they're listening to it. They love it. Like, just it's crazy. I mean, the guys are, everybody there is just fantastic, super helpful, and just insane that we get to thank them even being on this small little thing. So
yeah, thank you.
Yeah. With that being said, we got a couple announcements. Our first one that we're really excited for, the kind of hinted at before, the first episode kind of just compounded it, and talking to everybody at these trainings and through, you know, social media, family, whatever it be. Brennan and I just, we can't do one episode a month anymore. So we got everything lined up for the rest of this year. We gave you the list. That's not going to change, but January 1st, we're going to start doing 2 episodes a month. So may play around with doing some live recordings there. We'll see how it actually kind of feels and how the flow starts going. But the big thing that stopped us from doing that right from the start was getting guests, and then just all of these trainings, talking to these people, hearing how eager people are to not only watch it, but if we wanted to bring them on and talk to them, like, it sounds crazy, but it's not going to be an issue. Like, that's guests aren't going to be an issue. So we're going to definitely be able to do that. I don't have to wait, selfishly, I don't have to wait a month to talk to these people and sit here wanting to do another episode and get more out. So that's the benefit on my and Brennan end, but we're excited for that. So that's an update that we're really excited to give out. And like I said, we're not going to jump the gun in terms of earlier this year, just because we got that lineup finished. We didn't want to rush anybody and change anything that way, but January should be the first month of 2 episodes. So look forward to that. Last update that we'll throw in a little bit afterwards, but we got an update for the International Fools Convention. So if you guys aren't familiar with Fools, Fraternal Order of the Leatherhead Society, most states, I believe at this point, if not all, have a chapter. I'm sorry, not absolutely certain about that. But if you're passionate about the fire service, look at where your nearest Fools chapter is. They're great. They do lots of trainings, lots of membership benefits. You get to kind of work and learn from some really great people. So kind of highlight of that is every year is an international convention. I'll talk about where it was last year because it was close to home for us. But this year it's in Minnesota. So I got a little expert to read. Not the best at reading, so bear with me. So the annual Fools International Convention is happening August 17th through the 20th. So August 17th to 20th, get that down. And it's in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. Enjoy a long weekend of fraternity among the Fools International from across the country for the best time of the year to visit Minnesota. Same time as best time of the year to visit Wisconsin because it's warm. It's not It's not snowing. Even
negative five.
So what was that? 8 days ago, 1st of May, we got snow. So
yeah,
love it. Check out the Fools International Convention page on Facebook for information on registration for the hands-on training classes and the lecture series. Also, you can get on the Facebook page for social events that are exclusive to the Fools members. And as always, I mean, you just got to register early to get the best rate. So it's a great time. Like I said, close to home. Last year was actually in Milwaukee. So I was a member of Brew City Fools out in Milwaukee at that time last year. Got to help out with that. It was crazy. It was so much fun seeing everybody from all across. I think at that point, there was one from Alaska that came down, which is awesome. But just people from everywhere. The international is always there. So some, you know, pretty stellar guys and gals that all come down and show their support. And lots of hands-on training. There was an insane heavy lift training. It was so much fun. And I'm not entirely certain. You have to look on the page to see what they got planned for the international this year. But it's always a great time if you've got the opportunity and you're a member of the Fools. I suggest going to it or getting involved with your Fools so you're able to go to it. So yeah, Brennan, you got anything to add? I know you're kind of going to be new to the Fools. I convinced you to start joining here.
I'm new to the Fools. I'm trying to get in the old-fashioned Fools up by Oshkosh area, so it's kind of closer to me and Bryce. So I'm kind of working on getting in that, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. Yeah, I can't think. We got a challenge coin here. Georgie made some great challenge coins. But old-fashioned, yeah. It's a little hefty. It's a little hefty. It's fantastic. It can be used for multiple uses than just a challenge coin. But old-fashioned Fools, like Brennan set up in Oshkosh, just got started up. I transferred to that chapter. Like Brennan said, it's just closer to home. But Brew City, old-fashioned, we've all been working together. So there's two opportunities in Wisconsin that are both absolutely stellar. If you guys aren't familiar, I strongly suggest checking them out. So it's a fantastic time. Well, that's the last of the announcements. So without further ado, we've got, extremely excited for him, Captain Jeremy Sanders of the Edmond Fire Department. Let's bring him in here.
What's going on, guys?
How's it going?
Hey, Jeremy.
It's good, good. Glad to be here, and I really, really appreciate the invite for sure, especially the extra specialness of being the first guest. That's pretty cool. Thank you.
Wouldn't be better with anybody else. You've been such insane help. Can't thank you enough for everything.
Honestly, you know, if it means a lot that you guys keep bringing it up, and it's awesome that you're so thankful. But really, you know, that is kind of part of what I am really doing any of this for, is just trying to support people doing good things and add value to people's life, whether that's through something I'm saying or through something that, you know, I feel like great people have something to say. So I appreciate the opportunity that you kind of reached out, and hopefully we got some great things coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, we can't thank you enough for honored to have you as that first guest. And this time we're going to open it up for the guest portion. Basically, this is for you to talk about yourself, give a little bio, a little bit of what people need to know about you, and we'll get into our questions for you.
Oh, great. I love talking about myself.
It's the hardest thing to talk about.
No, I've never really been into the whole big bios of, you know, just the list of stuff, which it's pretty convenient because I don't have a lot of list of accolations and all that. So really for me, you know, I've been on the Edmond Fire Department for 21 years in July. I got hired back in 01, and that's the only place I've ever applied for. It's the place I've ever worked at. Just that's where apparently I needed to be, and I'm thankful to be there. Have served under the rank of captain for, I believe, about 6 years now. So really, really enjoyed that. It's definitely been my favorite position so far, and I'm sure we'll probably get into some of that later on. But got a great crew. We've worked hard over the past 5 years to really. So I'm very thankful for that. And the wind is starting to pick up now.
right as you were talking about it, yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
So just very thankful for, you know, having a group of great people. We got a small crew of five, so me and four other people, and just enjoying where we're at. I live actually up by Tulsa, so got about 100 miles drive between home and work.
That's crazy.
But got 10 acres. We used to have tons and tons of animals, but as kids have grown up and I've worn down from taking care of them all, we're down to some pretty bare minimum out here. So just trying to enjoy life and just enjoy what it is. So we got 8 kids. My wife and I have a blended family, which grew really quickly way. But just trying to figure things out day to day. That's a big job combining two full families and,
oh, absolutely.
And all the mistakes that I have made through the almost 10 years of that we've been together. And so had our first grandchild just, I guess, about a month and a half ago. So,
congratulations.
Getting old, and it's kind of crazy how it happens because it's fast, but that's about it, man. I love talking to people that are, you know, like-minded. I love talking to people that are like me, that want to be transparent and just authentic and want to help people. And so anytime that I get the chance to be invited on something like this, I'm super excited for her. And so that's me in a quickly wrapped up nutshell.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. There's a lot to learn from you. I very much enjoy hearing everything that you got to know, and just talking to you through phone, getting to know you there has been just crazy. So appreciate it, getting everybody a little taste of what you are. So with that, we can head right into our questions that we got there. So first one's a couple basic ones. We're just going to keep it kind of simple, get a little more of a groundwork. But first one is, how'd you end up in the fire service?
I kind of barely touched on it there. I ended up in the fire service because that was where I needed to be. That's the only reason I had no intentions of being a firefighter. You know, when I was a kid, I'm sure I know my dad was a volunteer for, you know, a short time when I was really young. But that's really the only thing that I can remember back having any associations with the fire service. You know, I didn't have that pedigree of just wanting to do it or really even any interest, because I don't know, it wasn't anything on my mind. So luckily I just kind of fell into it. You know, I worked with a couple brothers that were doing part-time job with me, just hearing their stories and kind of, I guess, just piquing my interest of what it sounded like they were a part of, which to me sounded like a team environment that I love. You know, I grew up in baseball. I love that team environment. I love the atmosphere that brings, competing as a team, all that. And so I think really that's kind of the first spark for me of just, this might be something I'm interested in. And somehow I found out that Edmund was hiring. And so I put in an application, and like very few people do, I got hired on the first time. You know, I think we hired 11 that go around out of that list, and there was well over 900 people. So for me to make that spot, it's ridiculous to think it's anything but just where I needed to be. You know what I mean? There was nothing that differentiated me from anybody else. I brought nothing to the table at that point. But once I finally got a taste of what I was actually a part of, there was no doubt that that's where I needed to be. You know, like a lot of us will say, if I had to find another job tomorrow, I have no idea what it would be, because I'm not good at anything. You know what I mean? So it's very good that I have found the fire service. I don't know anything else that I would really enjoy as much. But that's kind of how I fell into it. It's really, I truly believe it's where I'm meant to be. And not because I'm some physical specimen that does the job better than anybody else, but just because it's been a vehicle that has allowed me to both find and pursue my purpose, the purpose that I'm here for. And so that's really kind of it. There's not any glamorous, you know, family ties or three yeah. generations or anything cool like that. Just basically I'm on a path that was created for me, and thankfully it's not up to me to figure out that path. I've just got to keep my eyes open and follow it.
For sure.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Next one that we got down on here is, what did you do as a new firefighter to earn the respect of your crew?
Well, so out of rookie, kind of the way we do it, and it's changed a lot in years, but we do our own rookie school in-house. I think when I did it, it was like 16 weeks. It's went up to like 24 and back down to, I don't even know what it, I think it's around 16 to 18 now. But anyway, after that period, you know, you're on shift. And so I came on shift to a station with two other people in my class. And luckily for me, those two other people were mouthy and liked to kind of push buttons. So honestly, I just tried to disappear. You know, not physically, but I kept my mouth shut. I let those guys run their mouths and kind of get the brunt of everything. Because 21 years ago in the fire service, a lot different than this fire service today. You know, the harassment and the jokes and the pranks were very well alive and in existence back then. So I definitely just try to stay in the shadows, let those guys take the heat, and really just do my job. Honestly, that's just always my focus. I want to do the work I'm doing. I'm not saying that I have ever achieved that in any role of my life, but I'm definitely going to do my best to get there. And so just trying to learn as much as I can, keeping my head down and doing the work that I knew that I needed to do, and keeping a good attitude. Really, that's kind of basically what brought me through, you know, the first few years.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome. It's fantastic. That's great advice for everybody. And you've got Brennan's got on the flag right behind him there, but just to stay humble and do work. I think that's you implemented that at even just your rookie years. So that's fantastic there. And then they were going to kind of 180, totally flip it around. How do you now as a captain motivate your young firefighters?
For me, man, I think I've really started to gear everything that we're doing in that area to what they're interested in, you know, really trying to connect with these young people and really try to figure out who they are and what interests them. You know, one of the great aspects of the fire service is there's so many little pieces that you can grab onto and just take off with, you know, just all the different special operations, all the, you know, hazmat, TRT, dive, get into just engine work, truck work, break it down even smaller into forcible entry or hose work. You could just write chapter after chapter of just options of, you know, what you can start to be interested in. But just trying to figure out what really piques that passion in them, you know, because I've had to do a lot of things in my career that I wasn't really interested in the main body of it. And so the product I was putting out because of that lack of interest, it wasn't anything to speak of because I didn't have that passion behind what I was doing. And once I kind of figured out, well, these areas right here, I love anything to do with it. I love learning about it. I love physically doing things with the training, talking about it. Those are really the things that I started to grab on to and start to see that I was making a little bit of an impact. And so that basically that told me that that's kind of what I need to do for others. I need to help them to find those areas that they love, that they are going to thrive in, and ultimately they are going to make an impact in the lives and careers of others because of that. So I think that's the biggest, kind of the biggest focus right up front for me, is just figuring out that, because once I figure that out, then, you know, the process of trying to get buy-in from them, the attitude that we're going to see from them, all of these byproducts they're going to be a lot easier to achieve, because we're not just dragging them through stuff that they don't want to be, you know, involved with, or they're just not really interested in. So finding that right up front, it really facilitates everything else to kind of fall into place, and helps me as that formal leader to really do better work and to create a team that is going to do better work right off the bat. So for me, that's where it all starts. Oh, sorry. Okay.
That's awesome. Yeah. It speaks a lot to us. You know, we get a lot of that from where we're from with young a department we got, with all the opportunities for those special teams and stuff. And it makes stuff exciting. It makes being able to come to work and, you know, having an officer that knows what you're passionate about, what you got is just, it's a really nice way to stay energized and stay wanting to come to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, just to stick on that for a second, is that something, so just let me get an idea first, because I don't know if I'm totally clear. What is the years of service for both of you?
I've got full-time just over 2, but cadet since I was 15, so roughly like 7 as volunteer.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm about the same thing as Bryce. I started cadets at like 14, paid on call for a couple of years, and full-time for about a year and 6 months.
Now. Okay.
Year, just about 6 months.
So I'm hijacking your show, and the host above you, but do you guys feel like you have really pinpointed anything in that area for yourselves?
I mean, I think, no, I can't really speak for myself, because I think of everybody on our department, the person that did that the best was Brennan. And I mean, this kid for like probation, everything, I think he had all that stuff figured out. I mean, he was the hardest working guy at the station at all times. He was the earliest one there. And like our probation, like you said, it's so much different than it was 21 years ago, where, not that you don't have to do that anymore, but you can kind of just show up and do your job, which I'll be kind of outright of, was that's what I fell into, especially my year. I got hired with some people that I was able to kind of just be there and be good by association. But I mean, I think speaking for him, and I'm going to let him talk about that, because I entirely respect the fact of how he still does this. He's still the first one there. He's an extremely hard worker. So just making sure he doesn't miss that and steal that away from him. So now you talk about yourself, Brennan.
Yeah, I guess this is very hard. So I always came from the mindset, lowest guy on the totem pole. I should be doing the stuff, you know, before the senior guy gets there to the door. So yeah, like Bryce said, we start our shift changes at 7. I still to this day get there about 6:15. Get all some chores done, sit down, talk. But I really truly believe that, yeah, you should put forth the hard work, and I think good things would come out of that, which it did. I got placed on the tech team early, dive team. They just saw how dedicated I was, and how passionate I was with these teams. And they kind of helped me through that way. Just trying to work hard and, you know, get through the probationary period, and still do. So that's how I kind of think of things.
I think, and it's interesting, just I try to do a lot of reflecting, and it's going to come up here in a second when we start asking questions. Literally every time I start talking, a gust of wind hits. So if it ever gets too much, just let me know. I'll sneak inside. But
we'll see if we can do some editing magic on it later.
But honestly, I went going through the period that it was like, you know, I hate seeing some of this stuff go, because it was a rite of passage type thing. And nowadays you just don't see much of that anymore. But now, you know, a few years later, as I've thought through it more, and as I have now been a station captain of brand new recruit firefighters, I really started to change that concept in my head. And I honestly, I don't miss any of it. And I guess the reason for that is for these guys and girls that are on shift with me, they just went through, you know, a very lengthy recruit school that, you know, we've got a very good training division with some great officers that have led them through that process. And so they have a really good base of knowledge. Are they senior firefighter level people? No, that's my job. I'm not asking for that to come out. That it's my job to get them there. But I think now my mindset as far as towards these new firefighters coming on is I want them to understand that they, you know, this is their crew now. This is their house. They have a piece at the table, but you aren't truly a part of that crew. You aren't truly a part of the tribe until you show that you are, that you want to, you know, prove to us that you want to be a part of that. And so that doesn't require pranks and harassment and all that. And I say that we joke around with each other all day long. We harass each other all
day
long.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy to say that I am one of the targets. You know, I'm not excluding myself at all, but I try to give back just as much because I want to be a part of that too. And I enjoy it. But for me and for my crew, that's kind of how we really introduce ourselves to them. And we've went to kind of a process to where we don't really focus on any new person stuff. It's literally, we show up, we're out in the bay, we're going through tools, we're going through medical bags, we're going through hose packages, we're running through drills. And literally the last time we had a recruit come onto our crew, we spent at least two shifts outside just doing that stuff. Yeah, it was time to eat, and we made sure that they were, you know, had a good work ethic as far as cleaning and being a part of everything. But honestly, that's not my main concern with these people. My main concern with these people is that is for us, that's either 20% or 25% of our entire crew. They need to be solid as fast as possible. And so that was our focus. And just working on showing them the importance of connection to us. Connection is such a vital piece of the culture. And again, you know, we're going to get into that too. But for our culture that we have created, it revolves around connection. And it really has been kind of shown to them that it's a priority. And we involve them in that process. It's not, we're kind of secluding them because they don't have the right to be, you know, so-and-so. It's you are a piece of us. You just have to show us that you want to be here and that you want to earn that seat. So it's been a pretty neat process just for me, my mindset, kind of seeing where I've traveled, you know, through some of those thoughts. And so right now that's kind of where I'm sitting, and I'm glad for that, because I feel like we're putting out a lot better product as far as firefighters who are prepared for the future of their career, instead of just firefighters who try to keep their mouth shut for a year, and then a year and a day comes and now they're part of the crew. But really, what, you know, what was the point of all that? You know what I mean? And so I think that one of the coolest things, before we move on to the next question, about having new firefighters around is the opportunity to draw that passion that they bring. Yes. So that's what I love. I don't care that they are brand new. They still add a lot to my crew. Even if every other member of my crew has a lot of time on, that new firefighter is going to bring something that is going to make us better. And it's our job to figure out what that is. But at the very minimum, I would hope that they're bringing some passion, some enthusiasm, some drive that's going to kind of reinvigorate us. So that's kind of, I just wanted to throw that out there because I know that's a lot of, you know, why you're here. What yeah, you're absolutely. Trying to do is trying to pull out some of these things from, you know, the, you didn't say it in the title, but from the dogs. And so I really think that's important to keep in mind as a new firefighter, to hopefully not come in somewhere that is going to shut you down and not make you be part of anything. But you understand you have something to give. Even if that is solely motivation and attitude and work ethic and things like that, you have something to give. So if that's at least what you have to give, then at least give that. And hopefully you're going to be a part of a crew that really takes advantage of what you have to give and helps you out.
Absolutely. And I'm going to steal this right from under your nose and let you talk about it a little bit, but we took, Brennan and I took especially this. I mean, we took a lot from that train. We've mentioned that where we kind of first ran into you when you came to Wisconsin and Campbellsport. But the big thing we did was right as that training was going on, we were finishing up that logo for our shift. So one right here.
Yeah.
And we put in our order. We got a bunch of patches. We got a bunch of stickers for everybody on our shift. But then we ordered a bunch of helmet stickers. And like I said, took it right from under your nose. Our captain has all the helmet stickers and everybody that's off probation's got one on the helmet. As soon as you get off probation, you're going to get the shield from chief. And then you get the sticker from captain put on your helmet. But like, you're still a part of the crew. You've got all the patches, you got all the big size stickers, you got all that fun stuff, but just that little helmet sticker, that's what you got to work for. You're like, you made it. Not that now you're a part of our crew, but like you made it. Congratulations. So yeah, if you want to hit on that a little bit, I know you really enjoyed talking about that. We loved hearing about that with your Red 3. So
yeah, and that's going back to the culture thing. You know, like I kind of alluded to in my introduction, when I came to the assignment that I'm at right now, Firehouse, that we're a part of, it was literally the worst crew on the department. I have no, there's nothing that will hold me back from saying that was without a question the truth. And I was a brand new captain, literally less than 6 months on as a captain. And it was something that I had a very bad attitude about because I did not want to go there. It was a big turnaround. There were five people there. We switched out there were four at first. We had three new people to that crew. Only one existed. So it was completely different than it was, you know, people wise, but still that stigma was there. Mm-hmm. And so going into it, I knew that we had a lot of work to do, but I had no idea how to do it. I knew in my head, the vision of what I wanted us to be, who I wanted us to, you know, become as a crew. But I had absolutely no clue how to get there. And it was just almost a helpless feeling. But slowly, you know, day after day, month and year after year, we've kind of figured it out through lots and lots of mistakes and trials and error. But really the first step that I decided to take was kind of creating an identity for us, because it felt like we didn't really have anything that, you know, to see who we were. We didn't really have anything to fight for. That's kind of how I like to describe identity, is that identity, it gave us something to fight for because it unified us. Even if it's a goofy little design or logo or sticker, whatever it is, that gives us something, a solidarity to be unified with, to fight for. And so it began as a station logo. You know, we created t-shirts. Later on, I had some challenge coins made with that logo. And so we are Redshift three.
You have to repeat that last one. Yeah, you have to repeat that last one. Do you need
to go inside?
It's up to you. It only happens every once in a while. We'll see what we can take out. But
let me go. Can you pause this and I'll go inside for a little bit?
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
All right. Sorry.
All right. Technical difficulties are fixed. Back in here. Just kind of pick up where we were. So you were talking about Redshift, your crew creating that logo and everything there.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thought process I had behind it, was just trying to create something that differentiated us, you know, just as far as just a visual. Yeah, you know, I wanted us to be different from anybody else ultimately, but that stuff is going to take a long time. I knew that if I could at least kind of create something logo wise or something like that, it would help to at least give us a foothold maybe. And so it's funny that you say that. I actually have the shirt on right now. If you can see it.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't even realize it till just now, but
and so, I got,
oh yeah, the challenge coin to match it. Yep. Yeah.
Challenge coin right there.
And part of that, along this kind of the same time frame, maybe even first, you know, I just started printing out some reflective red threes to put on our helmets. And for us, we didn't have anything like that. There was nothing on our helmets or bunker gear or anything that said anything about where we were. Not even on like the front of our helmets. Nothing said what station or shift you were on. And so I thought it would be cool to just put some red threes on there. And that's kind of where it started as far as threes. And that's kind of what you were mainly alluding to. It was just something that I handed out, and several evolutions of people rotating in and out through the years, that's kind of where it was, until I just decided, man, I want to make this more special. I want it to become something more meaningful than just a sticker I hand to them. And so now, kind of just to explain the process, when I get a new recruit, I'll hand them a hat, a shirt, a coin, you know, whatever I have as far as station three or red three, basically right out of the, you know, day one. And that's kind of saying, welcome to the crew. We're glad you're here. Here's something to show off what you're a part of now. And then I'll show them the red three. And it's literally, there's nothing special about it. It's literally a vinyl sticker. It's a reflective vinyl sticker that cost a couple dollars. But I said, this is the red three that we all have on our helmets. I just wanted to show you this. You're not going to get this today. This is something that you will get when we feel like you have shown us that you want to be a part of this crew. When you have proven that this is where you want to be, that you want to be truly a part of this tribe that we have created, you will earn it back at that point. But I just want to show you and explain to you the significance of it, basically. And so, to me, stuff like that, it's important. You know, artifacts, mm-hmm. people call it artifacts or you know, whatever you want to call it. As goofy as it is, or little as it is, or cheap as it is, when you put meaning to that and truly, you know, live by what you're trying to make the example of, it turns into a really big deal. And I think it's turned into a really cool thing for my crew. It's not only just something that we're proud of. Okay, it differentiates us from others because, you know, we have the three. And now that I say that, there's a lot of other stations and shifts that have asked me to have some printed off for them. But as far as I know, nobody does anything meaningful wise. It's just it's to show who they are, which is fine. It doesn't matter to me. But now to see it truly is a big deal to have that on there, and to verbalize that to people. I think it's really cool to be able to kind of see the process grow, and to truly see these little things start to make ground in a good direction. You know, it's all these little things that kind of slowly come in to place and slowly stack onto each other that have made a big difference over that 5.5 years that we have made the turnaround that we made. So that's kind of the story of that. And it is absolutely something I'm very proud of, and something that we will continue to hold with high regards as far as my crew.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely want to touch on that, because it was something that we really got on, but yeah, that was a lot for our one question. We just, but on that question, just, I that's the best thing about this, is it's just going to keep feeding and spiraling off stuff. And there's so much that can go into motivation. So,
well, I'm an expert rabbit hole finder. So if you want to go off track, just ask me. Something, we'll go off track.
There's no off track here. There's no off track. Everything's good. So yeah, the next thing we got down there is kind of, I don't know if it ties in, it's going to have a lot of the same things on there. So I don't know if you got anything new that comes with it, but what do you think brings a crew together the best?
Yeah. I mean, it's somewhat similar, but it's also a lot more to it. For me, absolutely. It almost answers itself in that question. You know, the question here on the paper that I have is, what do you think brings a crew together the best? Bringing them together. If that isn't a part of what you're doing, you're not going to have a unified crew. You're not going to have a cohesive crew. You're not going to have a crew that completely trust each other and that are loyal to each other and will fight to the bitter end for each other. It all starts with that togetherness. And that is something I have definitely figured out that is a big draw for me. I see these crews all the time that are just absent from each other. You know, you don't see a couple members or any members all day long, except for when you might be eating together. You know, they're just kind of spread out through the station. You're one here, one there. And I absolutely hate it. I don't want to be a part of a crew like that. I want to be a part of a crew that wants to be together. And thankfully that's who I'm a part of. Our station helps to facilitate that. We're in our department's oldest station. It's a tiny little station. So there's not a lot of places to hide, but still, I mean, even at a small station, if you wanted to be a loner, you can go find something, you know, a place to hide. So I'm not going to completely say that's the reason. We show up to work. All of us show up to work at least 30 minutes early, and, you know, are getting ready for the day. So basically from 6:30 in the morning till, it just depends on the night, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, when people start finally going to bed, we are literally together. It's not something I demand. It's not something that I really even ask. You know, I'm sure I have verbalized the importance of it here and there, but it just happens organically because we enjoy each other. We enjoy the camaraderie. We enjoy the, like I said earlier, the harassment. You know, we got some guys that you can't show any kind of weakness or they're going to jump all over you. So it's like you're on guard nonstop, but it's fun. And that is something else that I have seen. You know, I've seen the crews that pick at each other, and you could just tell that, man, that they're not really playing. There's an edge to what they're doing. But with us, you can tell that it's out of love. And
oh yeah, absolutely. And
there is equal parts of truly connecting on deeper levels with us. You know, we're checking on family members. We're asking about days off, things like that. That, man, this job, if you don't focus on the relationships that you can have within the crews that you're working with a third of your life, you're missing out on so much of the job. Honestly, I don't know how you can enjoy the job if you aren't putting some effort into creating some better relationships and connections with those you work with. So that to me is the biggest, to just straight out answer that question without going off any other trails. That's how it begins. That's how it continues. And that's how it will outlast even, you know, when people go to different crews, is that connection that we have established through constant and just work and effort and attention and care and everything else. It just all kind of comes together because it's important to us. And it has been a big part of why our culture is special above, you know, just a normal culture that, you know, they're not a bad crew. They get stuff done, but there's a difference. And literally you can see the difference before you talk to anybody, just from a distance. So yeah. That's the best way I could answer that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head, and it makes me proud to say, I think I saw Brendan was smirking in the corner down there. I think a lot of the things you were saying is just stuff that we've seen and do with our department. I mean, last night you talked about it just happened passively, aside from me having to walk into the bunk room and tell Brendan to get his ass out of bed to come and join us for yoga at 10:30. Our entire shift did yoga at 10:30 and then finished a movie afterwards, which is 2 hours past Brendan's bedtime. But no, I was on a med call with one of our new guys, and then a ride along who is an employee of ours, but he's in medic right now. So he was riding on our shift. So he's not on our shift. And we got back at 10:30, and Brennan was on the med call with us, but got back and couldn't find anybody. So we just went into bed. And then I walked to a podcast. Everybody was like, are we doing yoga? And so I walked in the bunk room, and Brennan was just laying in there still awake. And I said, "Hey, got yoga to do." And he goes, "Oh shit, that's right. We're going to do that." It's like 10:30 at night, we're doing yoga in the day room, and then I'll sit in the recliners and finish the last part of the movie. But the entire time that we're doing yoga, we can't even take a break in the harassment and the you said, the all good fun harassment. I mean, all seven of us that were there are just back and forth as we're doing this relaxing yoga with the nice nature music playing in the background, and we're just digging at each other. So
yeah.
It's just, it's a great time. It makes it so much fun to go to work. I think you hit it absolutely right on the head. That
very
just
important to create that bond with each other, to form that trust within your crew and learn each other's weaknesses. And I think we work better together having that bond.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a sidebar on there, but one of the things that I heard very early from one of our good buddies, JD. He talked about how his wife talks about that she doesn't worry about him at work, like knows that they're, but she says that she knows there's a house on fire, there's somebody trapped, whatever it is, that the last thing he's going to be thinking about is them. He's thinking about getting the job done, going in and making sure and saving that person's family. She said that's the part that scares her. Part that brings comfort to her is she knows that everyone on his crew has the same mindset, but not just like, I'm going to save them, I'm going to save him. I'm not letting anything happen to him. I'm going to make sure the job gets done. That's happening. So that you got that passion for the job, but then that gives, I think, just that crew continuity gives your family that comfort as well. Yes, we do is a scary, a dangerous job. And if you're good at it, you're going to risk your life at some point. But if you build a good crew around you, everybody's going to risk their life and more to make sure that you make it home as well.
Right. Yep.
So that's true. It's right on the head, like always. So next one we got on here, what was your favorite, what is your favorite training topics to do with your crew?
As far as topics go, I enjoy just basic stuff. I think that's where we spend the most of our time, is just really kind of focusing on basics. Do a lot of hose work as far as pulling lines, flow of water, moving with the line open, things like that. Just working on technique and truly kind of getting good at all the little things. But I think the most enjoyable stuff for me to do training wise is the live fire or the scenario driven stuff. The stuff where we're actually putting the work that we put in previously to motion. We are a big playbook. We call it playbook writing assignments, whatever you want to call it. We're a big believer in that. That's something that is very new to me because I've never been a part of a crew that had that. So I never knew anything about it until I was introduced to it. And now I don't understand why anybody would not want to be involved with writing assignments, but every time we do something, it shows us how well that helps us out, because we all kind of know what, obviously we know what we're doing individually, but we all kind of know what others are doing as well. And so it may on the surface look like a bunch of ants running around like crazy, but we all are working on our individual tasks as a way to accomplish a set goal together. And so that's been really helpful for us to just find a rhythm and really take care of things the easiest, the best way possible. So what I enjoy the actual scenarios that give us a chance to put that stuff in motion. I'm not a war story guy. You know, I don't have a lot of stories or tell a lot of stories, but we did have a pretty good fire the other day. It was awesome because we actually had a recruit with us. We've got a recruit school going on right now, and they had a 24-hour day to where they're on shift with a crew. And we were lucky enough to get one of the guys that were in that. And literally less than an hour and a half into that shift, we had an apartment fire. So it was a pretty cool experience for him, but all of us, because you know, we don't get a lot of fire. So, but that was, I sat down with him later that night just to kind of see what he thought, just get some takeaways that he has gotten from the day and all that. And that was kind of a cool experience to listen to, because his main goal for that day was just to see how crews operate, see how things went and see how each individual kind of did their part. And literally he got to see it in motion on, yeah, you know, a fire. And that was something that he thought was very impressive, because we didn't say anything to anybody, each other at all. I mean, we got off the rig. We did our jobs. We got to the front door and we did whatever we needed to do. So those are the times that really kind of make it all worth it. But mm-hmm. to give a very long answer to an easy question, it's just that scenario type training that really almost tests you, but also validates what you're doing, you know, validates the work that you put into just skills and all that. And that's what I enjoy the most.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. That's always the best thing. You know, you got your actual fire calls are obviously your best at your time of shine, but bringing it as close as you possibly can is definitely what makes you able to see all those moving pieces get together. So yeah, that's fantastic.
Making sure you know every guy's job in the fire department is yourself. So I was taught, yeah, you should be knowing the next step ahead and keep building that critical thinking. You should know what your officer's thinking. I think working as a crew and actually getting to know that makes the call run less smoother. So the officer doesn't really have to tell you,
absolutely,
you know, a whole lot.
Yeah, we've talked about that on here on the first episode of just as like the officer side, training with your crew so you know what their limitations are. You know basically what their strengths are. Like you said, it makes things just, you don't have to talk on the fire ground because you already know what they're going to do. You already know what they can do. You know what they're there. And then as the officer, I think it helps you have that step, that planning forward of like, well, they're about to ladder this building, but search hasn't been done. So I know they're about to go in on the second floor. Like, yep. I don't know, how can I make sure stuff goes
build
that
way?
Build
that trust in your crew.
Yep.
Yeah. And right on the head, like always. This next one's a little more fun one. This was recommended by your lieutenant. I don't know if he was scoffing at Brennan and my cooking skills or not. and if he wants to actually send you to send us recipes or whatnot, we'll have to ask what he meant. But what is your favorite firehouse meal?
Honestly, that's one of the hard questions to answer on this, even as goofy as you might act like it is. I think, first of all, it depends on who you got as cooks, because everybody's got their thing. So, you know, you might have somebody that cooks something you're really excited about, but if they get transferred out and you have somebody else cook it's not as exciting anymore. So I think that's a big key to all this. What are your cooks really good at? For me, I think just to answer the without being a scapegoat or anything, stir fry is as simple as stir fry is. I love it. I love, And I guess kind of that love came from when we first came to Station 3. We had a great, great firefighter that we all miss and love so much working with. He's awesome. But he is originally from Hawaii and has a lot of family members that know how to cook stuff like that. Hawaii's big in rice and all that. And so he kind of introduced us to a really good recipe for it. And we've kind of hit it every once in a while, but that's kind of the easy way to answer that. I think that's a pretty simple meal, but I love having it.
Well, hey, I cook on Thursday, our next shift. So if you want to send me that, I'll make sure I try that. That sounds delicious. So steal that, make that one of my signatures. It sounds easy enough. I can't really screw that up. But coming to the job, I would probably burn cereal. I mean, it took me quite a while to at least eat or make stuff that's tolerable. And now I think signature is just a spaghetti that I make homemade, like with tomato paste and sauce. I'm like, this is homemade. But I've come a long ways. We'll put it that way. So
improvement is good.
All right.
So this totally opposite side. Now back into the more serious ones. We just kind of listed them as we got them in here. Maybe in the future we'll organize them a little more. But it's kind of fun jumping around because it makes you think more of stuff you may have forgotten. But this one is, what's the first step to changing culture in the fire service? So we've hit a lot on what a good culture looks like and how we do that. And you've hit things here and there of small things you do. But what do you think is that first step in developing it?
First step for me is a very clear answer now. And that has only come through, years of just getting older and learning lessons and failing and keep pushing forward. But the first step in changing culture is changing yourself. I absolutely 100% believe that if you do not change your mindset, change who you are as a person, change just what drives you, you're not going to be able to have any kind of impact on really anything, and especially changing something as particular and as tricky as culture goes. For me, it was a couple of years into this move to Station 3 that, like I've talked about several times, I was doing things to put a better culture into place. We had things that we were working on, just trying to do something different, trying to make something special. And things were changing. Things were going in a right direction. But it truly wasn't until I figured out that I was the problem. Until we really started making some positive, good, getting some positive momentum. It wasn't until then that started, because for me, I felt like I was a good officer. I had a crew that got along. We got the job done when we were asked to, but I wasn't putting anything into bettering ourselves. I didn't have a priority of any kind of training. When we had training on the schedule, we attacked it with a positive attitude and a sense of urgency and took it serious. But beyond that, I didn't ask anything else. I just didn't know. I saw a question on the internet or on Instagram yesterday, basically the biggest lesson you've learned since promoting to an officer. And my answer ties into what we're talking about. It's really, I did not truly understand the responsibility that I had on me as far as the future of the people I lead. I didn't understand that. And once that started kind of my eyes opening up to that and my mindset changed and who I was changed and, basically, I almost want to use the word transformed. I'm really starting to kind of like the word transform leader, transformational leader, whatever you want to call it. Until I was transformed inside, I wasn't truly able to make any good and lasting cultural changes. You know, once that started to take place, and once I started to realize that it's going to take constant, consistent growth every day, and I wasn't able to make anything truly last. And so that has now become a part of who I am. You know, that is, it's what drives me. I want to learn something every day. I want to, if that comes out of the arena of doing some training, if that comes out of listening to podcasts or books or whatever it is, I want to learn something every day. I want to add value to myself every day. And the second part of that is I want to add value to others every day. And so just that change in me, that realization of the weight that I truly had on me as a formal leader, that allowed me to take things to the next level. And not that, I don't want this to sound like I am the reason for all the cultural changes that have been made.
Yeah.
But without me truly having that mindset, nothing would have happened, because I wouldn't have understood how important it is to hold myself and others accountable. I wouldn't have understood the importance of making that daily growth a priority. You know, I just wouldn't have understood all this stuff. So I wouldn't have been the leader that we needed to get those things put in motion. So for me, absolutely, that's where it's got to start. It having good intentions, having the want to make change and to be better, that's great. It truly is great. But there's a big difference between those that want to do better, those that know that they could be a part of something special, and those that are truly doing what is necessary to make that happen. You know, I heard a speaker just yesterday talking about, you know, they asked the audience to raise their hand. You know, who believes that it's important to eat healthier and that will make you feel better? You know, who believes that if you truly, you know, had a better mindset, a better attitude, that would help you feel, you know, all these things that would help you feel better? And I'm sure, I was just listening to it, I'm sure lots of people raised their hands because they knew those things would help them feel better. And then she said, who is truly doing these things, you know, that they know are going to make them feel better? And obviously the reaction was not very many. And that's where we have to figure out what side of that line we're on. Well, are we on the side of just knowing and not doing? Or are we on the side of truly taking action towards those things that we know we need to be taking action on? So it all starts inside. I feel like I can go on this for a while, and
oh, yeah,
if you need to stop me. But another realization that I've just recently kind of come to is another piece of that, and a very important piece of that, is just like we talked about with culture. If I don't know who I am, if I don't know what I stand for, if I don't know my purpose, then what am I truly gaining in life? What am I truly able to push in life? It's almost like you're just kind of wandering around aimlessly. Yeah. You've got to, just like that culture of a crew, you've got to find your identity. Who are you? Who do you want to be? You've got to find your purpose. What are you here for? What is the plan that has been put in place that you play a huge role in? And until you truly reflect on these and truly dig into honestly figuring out what those answers are, you might be able to do some good things, but you're not going to be able to make the impact of, you know, significance that the people that have put the time in to figure those things out. That's when all of this hard work and all of these good intentions and all of this knowledge that you've been able to absorb, that's when everything falls into place and everything starts moving obstacles. things just start happening because you truly have that direction that is going to push you. And like I said, with our crew, it's going to give you something to fight for. I know who I am. I know who I'm not. Yeah. And so when things come up that go against that, I know that I'm going to fight for that identity because I'm not going to allow something to change who I am. And so that's the biggest thing for me is just that figuring out who you are so that you know what you want to fight for. And once you get to that point, once you kind of figure some of these things out, then you're able to start to make these changes with the culture. But it all starts there. And that's a big piece that you can't just answer instantly. If somebody asks you, what is your identity and what is your purpose? And you haven't put some work in beforehand, but you just shout out an answer. It's not right. Those are questions that are going to take you some honest reflection over time to really figure out what the answers are. And once you get there, man, it is amazing how things just start falling into place. It is amazing how things start opening up, you know, just kind of like you guys, this podcast came from nowhere, probably kind of.
With, yeah, it did. know,
it just kind of started as almost something in your stomach or something in your heart saying, man, let's do more. What can we do to do more? Because I want to do more. I want to make a difference. What can we do? And the brainstorming and things like that. And you start seeing these doors open up. You start seeing these opportunities fall at your feet. And it's because you're following that purpose. You're following that drive that pushes you towards what you're here for. And so, again, I'm really good at answering easy questions with long answers, but I'm truly passionate about that. And that's the base of what I'm doing. You know, that's the base of who I am.
Absolutely.
That's the base of my message. And so that's why I would imagine you probably kind of feel and see a difference in me as I'm speaking through this stuff instead of how I'm talking about stir fry. You know, there's a difference because I am emotionally tied to this stuff because I know how important it is. And I truly feel like the lessons I have learned through, again, lots and lots and lots of mistakes and failures and disappointments and all the rest, I know I can use those things to help others, to add value to others' lives, to Absolutely. Help them learn from my experiences and mistakes. And so it's just, it's who I am. It's who I'm meant to be. And it's all because, thankfully, I was able to figure out all those things that I just talked about. I was able to really transform myself. And that process has allowed me to really make any kind of changes or any kind of impact on others possible.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned it, and I think that's why we've latched on and been so thankful to have you come on these and been able to talk to you and hear the stuff from you, especially when we went to actual training, because you are passionate about this stuff. And, you know, you joke about turning short answers into long sentences. That's what we're here for. Like that's where we can learn everything. You can tell when somebody's passionate and they're not just giving those one sentence, one word answers of just kind of brushing on, moving to the next one. Like you can tell there's that fire and that passion. And that's as young guys, that's so important and just nice to see from like an officer's standpoint of seeing that they're still 21 years on the job officer, like excited to come to work every day, because you mentioned it earlier when we were talking about bringing in new guys, but the new guy, the first day I walk in the door, like it's the best thing ever. And it should always still be, but there is nothing I think that will ever match that your first full day as a firefighter. I mean, you've seen everything, you've worked for it, all that hard work's paid off. And like that, and I would say probably your first fire is the only thing that actually matches that first full day. But like, it's just still surreal that you're there, and there's always the jokes thrown around when they're like, oh, when's the first fire? When's everything going there? And all the old guys like, ah, once you've gotten 8, 10, 12, 15, 74, you won't be as excited for them anymore. But, you know, there's some truth to that. You still got to maintain that excitement, but nothing matches that new guy. Long.
Yeah. I'm ready for the next one right now. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Me too.
Yeah. I think it's just so important to see that that passion. It definitely fuels that same atmosphere and culture to just stick around, like you said, throughout all shift changes and people coming.
That's the tone of the shift. You come in every day wanting to improve, have that mindset of, hey, let's get some stuff done today. I think it really sets the tone of the crew. I think it's going to be a good day. You come in with a good smile on your face and ready to work. So.
Even if you run nothing but EMS calls for the shift, you still have fun. I mean, yesterday we didn't even have a fire alarm. You know, we talked about that in our last podcast. If I know every day I show up, I'm at least running an EMS call. I may not run anything. I may not put my gear on. And coming back from my training, it was a EMS based training with lots of trauma. So the train that we did was I got to lead, which is kind of fantastic because it was right after the training. So teaching, like, you know, Corley Moore talks about, I know there's lots of studies, is the best way to retain that knowledge. And so it was good to keep that. But I mean, it was an EMS focused day. I mean, we did trauma, we did ran EMS calls, but it was still a blast. We had lots of fun and doing our stuff. So even those when it's tedious, they get annoying, they always come in at dinner time. That was they always came in, like, still makes it just a fun place to be and exciting to get to work. So it's incredible. I think you have answered this next question throughout passively all the other ones, but what made you passionate about the fire service?
Well, I mean, I definitely kind of, I think I answered if you're asking what I am passionate about, but as far as like what made me passionate, that was something that it honestly took 17 years to get to that point. You know why? I like to say something. I like to throw something out there just so you get a full picture of my career. You know, anytime I talk about some of this stuff, because if you're listening and you think, oh, this guy is, he's just been ate up since day one. No, I've spent a lot of time in those 21 years at the low end of the roller coaster. You know, a lot of times I was on crews that I could not stand. I had no passion, had no drive. I remember times in particular that my biggest goal for the day, especially on a weekend, was to eat breakfast as soon as possible and hopefully sleep until I got hungry and got up and ate some lunch. And I remember those days. That was me. I was that person. The person that I am going to very passionately try to get people to not be anymore. But at the same time, I feel like that does, it gives me some authenticity to speak to those people, because it's not like somebody that has never experienced it and trying to tell them you don't need to be doing this. It's not right. I am somebody that has been there. I wouldn't say that I've ever just been an absolute worthless turd on the department, but I've definitely been somebody that did not add to anything. I was just there. You know what I mean? And so for me, it honestly, it goes back to that kind of that mental transformation that I experienced. It wasn't until then, until I truly started to find my voice, find my passion with the fire service. I've always loved the job, even when I wasn't truly into it, when I was kind of, you know, lazier or just worn out, whatever you want to call it. I still love the job. I've never been that person that griped about the job or griped about calls, even though I am not an EMS person. And I do it because I have to, and it's my job. I've never been that far off. You know what I mean? But I just never really experienced a passion for it that I could convey to others. That love was inside, but I never found anything that I could truly help others to feel until kind of that experience. And so after that experience, it was very clear to me, this is what I am passionate about. You're not going to hear me talking at classes or speaking in front of people about, you know, tactics stuff. I'm not that person. Not that I am inconfident or that I don't feel like I can. I'm not passionate about that stuff as much as I am about culture and relationships and leadership and, you know, just helping others to gain from what I have experienced. That's what I am truly passionate about. So it took a long time to get here. It took, you know, a lot of transforming of my mind and a lot of just, you know, God's work and everything else that you want to throw in there to figure it out. But once you figure it out, there's no question anymore. It's very clear to you that this is exactly what I need to latch on to and really go after. And I feel like, you know, going back to kind of, you know, we addressed this as far as the new hires, the new recruits, of finding areas they're interested in. That's what makes it so important. You know, if you can find those areas and really just push them to learn and grow in those areas and get as much as they can out of it, because right around the corner, you turn that around into teaching others what you're growing and learning in and what you're passionate about. And that's where the fire service gets better. It is taking the areas that we're all passionate about. Once we find them, once we gain value with ourselves in those areas, and we throw that value back at others and add it to others and help others get better in it, that's how we're going to make the fire service better. So it's, again, it's not an easy process. You know, you got to kind of play around and figure out what you're passionate about. But I like to say that authenticity has no competition. If you are truly authentic, if you are passionate about what you're speaking, what you're teaching, it doesn't matter who else is doing it or who else may do it better. That is going to have a huge impact on others. That authenticity is amazingly in stark, you know, contrast to those that are just out there, you know, teaching to teach. But it all goes back to, are they truly passionate about what they are teaching?
Absolutely.
If you haven't figured that out, it's a good place to kind of start digging in and figuring out what you want to be a part of.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's well said. We talk about that a lot. There's a lot of people in the fire service that like to go around and teach and share their knowledge, and it's fantastic. But you know, there's always your share that they try to dip into too much and anything and just trying to fit the market. But sticking with what you're passionate about, I think you're always going to have a good following and an excitement to see you teach and see you speak. So yeah, that's just, as always, spot on. All right. The second last question that we got on here is probably one of our most loaded ones for you. So yeah, what is your biggest regret as a firefighter and as well as a company officer that happened in your early career?
I feel like this is, and I don't want this to sound like I'm trying to skate by the question. I feel like this is one of those questions where it's like, I can almost address it two ways. The first way is, yeah, there's obviously some regrets. I've mentioned failures and mistakes over and over, you know, in this conversation. But to truly regret doing those or to maybe even have the mindset of I wish that didn't happen, I don't really have that, because all of those things have led me to where I am at today. Yeah. All of those things have turned me into the person I am today. Not only just the company officer, but the husband, the dad, you know, the friend, whatever it is, that's become who I am, dealing with all those things, the mistakes and the effort or the all the things that people wish they didn't go through, people wish they didn't happen. I don't want to have that mindset. as far as, you know, answering it and giving you an actual answer, I think I already did. You know, it's those times where I wasn't really giving anything. I was there filling a seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I missed out on a lot of opportunities to not only make myself better through that whole time, but to add value to anyone that I was around. So there was a lot of wasted opportunities in those times. And so I think very easily that's what I would say. Kind of, it's not really any specific event. It's not any specific, you know, just straight clear choice that I've made. It's just those times that I wasn't doing what I now feel I know is so important for me to do, but I let that slip away. I can't get that back. All I can do is take advantage from this point on and do everything I can, you know, to make up for it now.
Absolutely.
I believe failures are your biggest teachers.
Absolutely.
I think you learn.
And that right there, I'm glad you said that. It's definitely your biggest teacher as far as, okay, I made a mistake. I learned from it. I hopefully get better. But where I really want to place myself in that kind of that scenario is I want you to learn from my mistakes so that you don't have to make them yourself. You know, I went through that already. There's no taking that back. I've already went through it. So I can either just forget about it and act like it didn't happen and have basically went through it for nothing, or I can use those mistakes and those experiences, negative experiences, to try to help others not to go there and actually get some good out of those bad situations that I have been in or put myself in. So that's kind of, you know, because you said that, I just felt like that's necessary to mistakes are a great teacher, but the best mistakes to learn from are somebody else's mistakes because you don't have to make them. So that's kind of the thinking on that for me.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's spot on. There's always different ways to answer that. So yeah, I think that was a great way to take that. I don't think it was a scapegoat at all of trying to get out there. It's you've hit lots of times that nobody's perfect and we got to learn from all of it. So that was great. Next up, we got our closing questions, which we're going to keep the same for each guest with the little difference in there. Unfortunately, you being the first one, you don't get the benefit of where we at, what we see this going. So basically, every time that we close out with our guests and the terms of the question aspects, we want to have a question from the previous guest. So as you're our first guest, basically all the questions that we got are ones we already asked you there. So we don't got anything really new to add in there, but that's what you're going to miss out on. However, I know we've talked about, and Brennan and I definitely want to have you on again, so you won't always be drawing the short straw of not having that one, because I think that's to be a cool thing to hear from not just our young firefighters, but seeing all these experienced people, what they would ask other experienced ones. So that leads us to the second question that's going to come with it, which is what question do you wish you had asked as a new firefighter, or do you still have yet to be answered? And that's going to be the question that we are going to give to the next guest.
So you saying which question I wish I asked, or which question I wish was asked of me?
What question you wish you asked? Is there something that as a new firefighter you feel that you waited a really long time to ask? Or is this something that even to this day you haven't either got an answer with, you have a question for the next guest? Basically, what would you ask as a young firefighter, or as right now, of a more experienced one, or a different one in your same shoes?
I think the biggest question that I wish that at least was on my mind, you know, I don't know who you would ask this or who I would have asked this of, but at least if it was on my mind, I think I wish that it was really, it's kind of echoing everything we've talked about. I wish that I was asking why I'm here. You know, why am I truly here? What is the purpose for me being on the fire service? And that's not an answer that I want to be answered really quickly. That's an answer that I'm okay with kind of seeing evolve over 25, 30 years to truly get the full grasp of that. But that's what I would ask, because that would have probably given me a little bit of a purpose or a little bit of a help in those down times. You know, I would have had that to lean on to say, you know, I know my drive is not here right now. I know I'm not with the crew that I've enjoyed the most right now, but I know why I'm here. So I got to keep going. You know what I mean? I feel like, and I don't know if that's a very good answer to that question, but I think that would truly be my answer for that is just kind of know or asking to be shown why I'm here and what role I can play in this whole big world of our service.
Yeah. I mean, personally, knowing our next guest, I think he'll have a lot of words to say about that and have some ways to work that out. So I think that's a great question. That definitely, especially knowing Blatz, he will give the answer and more about that. So there'll be lots of discussion on that. So that's a great one to throw in there. So with that kind of concludes all the questions that we got there. So talking to everybody listening, that's kind of the way that this is going to go. We got lots of questions that we want to ask of all of our guests that are coming in there. And as just a reminder to send in your questions. So at this point, by the time that this one's going to be done, our recording with Blatz is going to be done. However, in terms of real life, within this week is when we're going to basically send out the post saying that our next guest is going to be on, sending questions there. So for next time, when we got Jeremy on here sending questions for us to ask him, this time it was basically just Brent and I coming up with them. But that's the idea, is getting involvement from everybody listening and getting the questions that you want answered. So it's not just us asking the same ones or basically having only our outlook on here. We want to hear from everybody. So Messenger, comments on the post, email, whatever it may be, just send in questions whenever you see a new post on our next guest. And we'll make sure we can include all, as many, if not all of them, in there. So it's kind of the idea of it. So I really appreciate all the answers you gave us here, Jeremy. That's just concluding the questions area. We got a little bit more that we'll keep you around to talk to you for, but that's amazing answers as always. I love the detail we went in. I love the rabbit holes. I love everything about there. That's kind of the whole reason we did there, is you can ask a lot of guys, especially senior guys on departments during the day, whatever it be. And you may get the one word, the one sentence answer, just because that's kind of how time allows. So really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and explain your thought process and everything that has to do with it.
Enjoyed it for sure.
Yeah. All right. Last part that we got here is our kitchen table. So just absolute bullshittery. Basically anything that throughout the podcast has been stuff that either you wanted to touch on more, or you feel you didn't get to explain. If you know, Brennan's got some questions, I got some questions, anything that came up, or just talking shop and kind of sharing stuff about each other, our experiences in our department. It's all up to you.
All up to me? Is that what you're
basically? Yeah. we'll leave it up with you. We'll come up with some stuff if we need to.
No, I mean, questions for us.
Yeah. I think this is interesting that you kind of call it, you know, label it the kitchen table. You know, obviously it's no secret how important the kitchen table is in the fire service. And so it's pretty neat idea. Before I do that, I want to give you guys credit for going after something. You know, you felt the need to do something more, like I said, and you found a good niche. You know, you're younger guys in the fire service. And so you're taking a great thing, a great mindset of wanting to learn from those that have been in it for a while. And I appreciate kind of that mindset and the willingness to put yourself out there like that and to find a niche in a world as oversaturated as like the podcast world is. Even the fire service just piece of the podcast world is crazy. I can't believe how many different ones there are. So you guys are going to do some exciting things and it's cool to kind of see that in play. And like I said, having the kitchen table as part of it is really neat for me, because you know, I touched on the importance of connection and relationships and stuff like that. And that's where a lot of the arts. And so just, I guess for me, if you're wanting me to ask questions just kind of asking why or what that truly means to you. Why did you put a kitchen table labeled kind of section into your podcast, and what that truly means to you to want to do that?
Yeah, I think the idea really came from Brennan and labeling it, and you nailed it right on the head in our first episode. So I'll let you start with that, and I'll fill in any gaps or anything. So,
all right, first. So I think we had the kitchen table to kind of talk is to, what's the word?
Bullshit.
Bullshit. And learn about our guest. You know, like you hit it on the nail in this podcast, is the importance of knowing your crew, knowing who you're talking to, building that relationship. And I think the kitchen table is no better place than the kitchen table to learn about your crew, learn about, you know, how they got in the fire service and their family and all that. I think that comes from the kitchen table and talking. So I think that's a good thing to put in the podcast to kind of, you know, talk to you, talk to other people interviewing, and build that relationship with them.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you think of just the no structure of that. I mean, you come to the kitchen table, whether for us, we have our morning trainings are always at it. So we have our coffee or break, and then we do some SOGs review and stuff like that. And that part's, you know, that's structured. We know that we're going to do that every day. The conversations that come from it are not. I mean, you solve the world problems at the kitchen table. You know, have all the gripes, all the complaints, and you figure that all that stuff out, and it just passively comes out. So I think for us, it was most of this is structured with our questions. You know, we've got kind of one way that each one's going to go, and that's kind of how we wanted this to be, just in terms of having that niche, like you said, of making it different. But we didn't want to lose that still passive and just informal area of just talking and just making it connect, making the connections, making it feel like you're talking to a person, not just you're here to answer questions, move on. And there, like, we know that's what we really try not to do. And we can't believe how many, like Brennan said in our last episode, can't believe how responsive you are to the text, and like just the text this morning. Like, it's just the fact that all of these people, all of our guests that we've been talking and reaching out to is just insane. And it's just, it already makes it more personable in there, that I think it's just icing on the cake of being able to just sit here and talk shop, and like any other firefighters do, sitting around the table. So
yeah, well, I since you kind of just going off of what you just said, I feel like I need to say something else, and here you go, here's your informal kitchen table conversation. But so I had the, I don't even know how to describe it, the very, very tremendous honor of going to FDIC, what was it, last week, or has it been 2 weeks now? It's crazy. It goes too fast.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was about the first time that I had been to FDIC. So just a big deal anyway, just being my first time. But truly what drove the want to go to that was a friend of mine, Brian Brush. I don't want to be a name dropper, but you know, one of the best known names in the fire service. And I was lucky enough to work with him for a few years. He worked with in Edmond for a few years, and that just, it helped to develop a relationship between us. And I'm so thankful for that. But He was given a keynote at FDIC, which is a gigantic honor. I mean, yeah, probably absolutely one of the biggest honors of our, you know, of our career, our service, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was something that I really, really wanted to make it to be a part or just to see. Mm. And so thankfully I got to do that. We were able to sit very close to the front and just really take it in, and did an amazing job of the keynote. If you guys haven't heard, or anybody out there listening hasn't heard it, go to Fire Engineering's YouTube channel and they have it right there. Unquenchable Faith, I believe, is the title of it. So look that up, because it's great. But anyway,
for sure.
he started off that that speech by saying he was here because somebody believed in him. And of course he has a picture up on the big screens of him and Bobby Halton. And so that right there, kind of what you just said, Bryce, it makes me want to say this, and that's exactly what I would say. I am here because somebody believed in me. I am here because somebody answered my text. I am here because somebody took the time to meet with me and kind of walk me through writing articles, and somebody who took the time to look through some of my presentations and kind of help me to learn a better way to do it. Took the time to push me to start speaking and gave me the chance to speak. You know, I'm not here if that stuff doesn't happen. I am not here if others don't do things to help me get here. And so, you know, when you say that you were surprised by my responsiveness of text and things like that, I'm glad that means a lot to you, because honestly, that is, I have to do that, because that is what I owe to those that did it for me. And I don't mean have to do it as far as like it's a pain or a chore. I just mean,
sometimes texting me is a chore. You can come on this time. Brennan, my lieutenant would be the first one to tell you that he's probably dreads every time his phone rings, he sees my name, because I'm always bugging him about something. So,
but no, I mean, that's the very least that I owe. You know, I will never be able to repay the work, the belief, the effort of others for allowing me to get to this point. But I've got to at least take advantage of any little situation that I can. And this is one of them. You know, a young guy reaches out to me after hearing me and somebody else speak, and they're interested and inspired to branch out and start something on their own that's completely new. I mean, that's an awesome honor for me to be, you know, one of the people that they reach out to. I take that as, I don't know, it's a big deal to me. I really appreciate that. And so I want to be the person that somebody says someday, I'm here because they put into me, because that's exactly what I can say. You know, I can say that without the work of others, I wouldn't be here. So I just hope to be that for somebody else in any way that I can. And so that's why, you know, I know that my resources are limited, my knowledge is limited, but I'm going to try my best to help when there are good people doing good things out there that need a little bit of help. So I just wanted to throw that out there, because it's, I don't want it to go unseen that the person talking here is somebody that, I mean, it's weird to say it, but I have a good message. I know I do, but it's not a message I just came up with. It's not a message that I am inventing on my own. It's something that has been given to me. It's something that I've truly, it's been passed along and has been blessed upon me. And so I have to do what I can to take advantage of that. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you for believing in us for everything that you said. So that was just insane. I mean, even thinking back, if you go along the regrets, I think my one regret is we actually did not get to formally meet you in person. One, because we were like, I didn't expect this. I mean, this was a very small idea. We hadn't even talked really about doing it. It was literally a kitchen table idea that we had played around with, and talking about the sitting through your and Sean Duffy's presentation and the culture and everything was kind of really when it sparked it. And just being there, I remember like the breaks, the kind of like nod. And I was like, yeah, he doesn't want to talk to us. Like he's here. He's like, I genuinely didn't think that anything would come from it, or that I even could. Like, I didn't understand. I knew there was a brotherhood in this job, but I didn't understand the celebrities of this job felt the same way as well, and that it was talking there like that. That's what you were to us going in there. You were there for a presentation. There was, as new firefighters, is maybe the second or third that I've actually been to. And not that you didn't come off as approachable, but you didn't think that you could. I mean, you think of any other job, anybody that comes in to speak, like they're just here to get their money, to send their message and go out. And like, I think it just was such a surprise that, and not even one that you should be surprised about, that everybody in this job, especially the ones that want to spread that message, are just like any of us and approachable and want to communicate. And so that's like, I can't wait for you, for either us to come somewhere near you, go to the same train, whatever it be, we can actually meet you in person. But yeah, that was kind of the most biggest regret that I had after realizing how easy it was, is, you know, I would have loved to meet you and talk to you actually while you were here.
That is a, you know, you said that you probably shouldn't be surprised that that's how kind of the majority of people are, mm-hmm. like, you know, like what you're talking about, but it really is unique. You know, you have some, you go to FDIC. I said it several times. We were in a bar the first time, just kind of talking with various people, and it's literally like you're living in Instagram. You know, if you're a fire service nerd and you follow lots of fire people, that's what we were living in Instagram. Everywhere you looked was somebody that I follow. But the crazy thing is that almost all, and I've met a few, I've heard stories of a few others that aren't this way, and that's fine.
Yeah,
it'll happen everywhere for people like that. But most people are just people, and they're happy to shake your hand and happy to say hello and glad to meet you, take a picture with you, and you know, answer a question, whatever it is that you have. Most people are just normal people that are excited to have the opportunity to be somebody that people look up to. And that has been the most refreshing thing for me as I get out and meet some of these bigger people. And just like you, there's people that I wish that I would have had more guts to sit and talk with more, but it's like, you know, I don't want to be that person that just ties them down. But it is cool that there are so many people there, big names, big reputations, just great stand-up people that are just great people. They're not just people with a good message or people that do a good job speaking and inspire others. They're just good people. And so that's been really cool to see.
Yeah. And that's of all the things that you've done for us, that's one thing that was really kind of beneficial and that I can't thank you enough for, is you being that approachable and reasonable, even with it being over text. And you know, like I said, me having that regret of not talking to you, in terms of like the benefits for this podcast, was like an eye-opening experience, where the last couple of trainings Brent and I have gone to, we have talked to the lead person there, done that, because kind of like you said, if I realized talking to you and talking to Sean Duffy, he got back to us, and like everybody that we were starstruck to talk to, if they aren't approachable, you know, it's going to come off a little mean, but like if they aren't approachable, they don't want to talk to you, we really don't want to talk to them either.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so like just going up and talking to all these lead speakers, instructors, whenever, reaching out to all these people, I was like more fearless and had more guts in the terms of like, if they say no, they say no. Like, not that they don't have wisdom to share. And I'm sure they do great teaching and sharing it there. And I speak like we run into them, but I have not found anybody yet, which has been insane. But if that's somebody's outlook, there's not really much that they're going to benefit for us in terms of this podcast. So it helped us line up some fantastic guests for next year to finish out the roster for this year. And like, in terms of, let alone everything you've done for a career in this podcast, that just for the audience and everyone listening, like that's going to be one of the most benefits that we got from you, is that courage and guts to go out and get more guests and talk to these people that we really want to hear.
I've been told that since, especially when I have a mustache, I look like a grouch that didn't want to talk to anybody.
No, I know I included. Cool, yeah. I know I included some of those pictures. It's just, I hope people look at the pictures.
No, it's not from you. It's mainly from my kids, basically.
Yeah, so. I'm going off the fact that you look like a totally different person. Like it's just that's I know true. You sent those pictures to me, and I know I said that right back to you, but like I didn't think that you growing that beautiful mustache when mine's, you know, as
I can't grow one, so
but
I got that going for
me. I was like, oh, there's no way he never didn't have the mustache, and you sent all those pictures, and I was like, is this the same person? I was like, wow, that's like it's just it was very entertaining, very exciting to see. So yeah. No, very, very approachable even there. I know, like I said, at the training, didn't have the guts to go up to you, but even then I know you were talking to people. I saw you all the time and I was trying to be like, oh, should I go up? Could I, whatever there, but no, you definitely were approachable. It was just not a realizing of how open this community was when really there's no reason it isn't.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hopefully I'll be back up that way eventually. My wife is originally from Minnesota, so as you were talking about the Fools Conference, I'm sitting here conniving a plan to make something work. But either up there or Wisconsin with, you know, Nick Peppard and some of the things that those guys are doing up there, I'll make my way up there eventually.
Yep. We have to come to Sawdust next year.
Yeah,
so those dates are already set. We were at that 2 weeks ago, or whatever, and that was great. Yeah, Nick Peppard was there. We got lots of our guests. Our future guests were speakers and presenters at Sato. So that was kind of really exciting to see him, and can't wait to get everybody on there. So no, that's a really exciting for that training to hit Wisconsin in there. So yeah, whether it be the Fools or whether it be next year, definitely we'll find a time.
For sure. Perfect. Well, I definitely want to, I guess, throw this out there if you're okay with a plug or two.
Absolutely.
I'll be in Lake Ozark for the Revolutionary Fire Tactics at the lake in July. I think that they pushed it back, so I think it's towards the end of July this year. But I'm sure there's some spots available for, you know, attendance there, even at the point when this is – when do you plan on putting this out?
So it's May right now, so it'll be June, first week of June. Okay.
So I'm sure there'll still be some spots available if you haven't heard of it. It's a great conference. I've been there – I think this will be my third or fourth year there, but awesome. I really enjoy it there. It's just a great environment. It's not so big that it's overwhelming, but you know, it's just small enough to really be able to form some relationships and have the opportunity to talk to some of these instructors, like you're talking about, to really meet them and hang out with them later. So it's a great environment. I would love to see anybody out there that wants to come to my class. I hope that it's full at some point, but I'm sure there's still spots available, but we got that out there. And I just wanted to kind of anybody that has any questions or wants to, you know, contact me or whatever, everything I have basically is under Crew First Culture. Email is crewfirstculture@yahoo.com. And that's with a one. And all social media is Crew First Culture. So pretty easy to find. Just reach out to me and love to hear from you. But yeah, I think I say that just to say this as well. You know, you two are examples of people that not only feel the urge to do more, you not only see an opportunity to do more, but you take advantage of that opportunity or you even create your own opportunities. And that's probably one of the last things, I guess, that I'll share with everybody out there is those opportunities are there all the time for us. They're coming and going, whether we're paying attention or not. And so just keep paying attention and take advantage of any opportunity that you can and really just see where the path takes you, because you will be amazed at where it takes you. I promise you. You, if you are open to where life takes you, if you are open to taking advantage of the opportunities that are given, you'll just never be able to guess where you end up. And I hope that truly continues with me. I don't want to end here. No, I want to see more and more things kind of creating for myself and for the message I have. So. Just Absolutely. Wanted to throw that out there, because that's not
For sure.
just like you guys talked about, you know, being taking that step to introduce yourself to somebody. Little things, they might kind of seem goofy to be overwhelmed by, but they're a big deal, and it takes a little bit to push yourself sometimes out of that comfort zone. So don't be afraid to push yourself. It's discomfort and the stretching yourself is a good thing. Just go with
absolutely.
It. Enjoy the ride.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we can't thank you enough for being our first guest and for all the help that you've done. So you'll be mentioned in almost every episode, I guarantee it. So we appreciate everything.
Enjoy the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that leaves just one last thing, which I told Brennan, I want to do this as cheesy as it may be. If you watch the first episode, we've got our little shift saying, as well as our podcast thing of just the simple, don't be a shitbag. And that's how we're ending every single podcast. And I thought it'd be fun, at least for me, like I said, cheesy for probably everybody else, that we get our guests to say it as well. So I'll take it off. We'll hit Brennan and then you close us out and we'll end this episode here. So thank you for being on this. It's been an honor. It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys. Everybody listening, look forward next month. This will be in June. So July, we'll have Thomas McMiniman or Blatz on there, and can't wait to get him on there and to keep this little project going. So without further ado, don't be a shitbag.
Don't be a shitbag.
Don't be a shitbag.
Thanks,
see you
guys.
Next time.
See you guys.
Thank you.